It's 8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
A very good evening and welcome to Behind the News. My name is Ibrahim Kwarte, and tonight, NPP makes U-turn on decision to hold the centralized conference to elect national executives. We will look at the latest development on the toll collection for use of University of Ghana roads. And demystifying misconception about consents, how can members of parliament help? But before that, we go to Baba Otu for the summary of the day's news.
Thank you very much, Ibrahim. The New Patriotic Party, NPP, has slated April 12 for its National Delegate Conference, which was previously scheduled for the 1st of March. The conference will be held in Tamale at a centralized venue. The Director of Elections, Martin Ajayi Mensah-Khosa, told Radio Ghana that the party's adoption of the centralized National Delegate Conference instead of the decentralized one has nothing to do with financial challenges. Ghana is calling on heads of member states in the West African sub-region to come up with a regional document on cancer control as the world marks Cancer Day today. This follows reports that out of the 8.2 cases recorded globally, 65% occur in developing countries, including Ghana. Also on the floor of Parliament today, members of the House stressed the need to intensify education on ways to prevent the disease. And the head of policy monitoring and evaluation at the Office of the President, Dr. Tony Adu, has asked government to prohibit foreign companies from repatriating all their earnings to help stabilize the city. This follows the General Overseer of the Christian Action Faith Ministry, Archbishop Duncan Williams' prayer for the rise of the city. Dr. Adu believes government must rather take bold measures to tackle the issue instead of resorting to prayers.
So we begin with our first story. The NPP's attempt to organize a decentralized conference to elect national executives has been overturned. The party has a tradition of holding a centralized delegates conference at a selected venue. There were commentaries indicating that the party is not in a sound financial state to organize a centralized conference for election to national executive positions. What therefore went into the decision to hold a national centralized conference? The director of elections of the NPP is Martin Ajayi Mensah-Khosa. You're welcome, sir.
Thank you, and good evening to your listeners.
Right. Can you confirm that NPP has rescheduled this impending national delegates conference to a later date, and that will be a centralized conference?
That is correct. We have moved it from the 1st of March, which we intended to do, to the 12th of April 2014.
Mr. Kota, we're having some feedback. If you could readjust your position a bit.
Yes, I was saying, is it clear now?
It could be better if you shift a bit forward.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yeah, it's better now. Right, so we are listening to you.
Yes, I was saying that it's true, we have moved the intended conference for electing national officers the 12th of April from the 1st of March. And the event will be taking place in Tamale, the northern regional capital. We have done so today after deliberations by the National Council of our party, which earlier set the date and which NEC implemented. From today, all arrangements will be geared towards holding this event on the 12th of April, and all other arrangements done earlier in terms of picking of forms, expected dates for filing, vetting, and so on, all remain the same for the day and the place of the election.
Right. Mr. Kota, what could have gone into this decision, Richard Lane, the date and venue?
Well, we looked at a number of issues. First of all, the party has some members who has been engaged in some debates. The debate finally got onto the platform of NEC. NEC took on the issues, deliberated further, and by consensus across the board, everybody thought that we are better off doing a centralized way than the innovation that we are about to try our hands on by the decentralized system. Unanimously, everybody felt that the time is quite close, and we need to do a centralized event. Particularly also, previous times we have missed the opportunity of doing this event in the three northern regions, anywhere else, anywhere in the three northern regions. This time around, the leadership thought that let us not forgo the very important opportunity of taking our party closer to our brothers in the north. Look, this is a place where we've increased our parliamentary performance from 3 to 10 and thereof. And so you want to go there and excite party members, show some appreciation, interact them up to work them more. Again, we thought that in a unique way we could honor the memory of our former Vice President, Alhaji Aliyu Mahama, who's been called to glory and whose current place of rest is the northern region. It would be a good sign of respect and honor to him if we went up north in Tamale to do this event. So unanimously, these overriding reasons pushed the meeting to accept to do it in the north.
Right. Mr. Akosa, if you recall, on the same platform last week, I had an engagement with you on this subject, and then you categorically dismissed the issue of euphoria and enthusiasm, which some of us believe could be lost. Are you afraid, you know, looking at what came into this decision, that the party, that this is not coming from me, the proponents of this view, that the party could lose more votes if you had gone the decentralized way?
Not necessarily. Why do we lose votes if we had done it centrally? Not necessarily. Also, the argument had been that if there were any euphoria to be gotten from just the ground, then it's important decentralizing these euphoria across the country. But I think the more importantly, we have looked at issues that may override. Just the issue of euphoria. Euphoria may not be the overriding principle. But you want to consider, for example, the fact that you're going to have to honor the memory of our Vice President. I think it's unique, especially when we've missed all previous opportunities. Here we are, we had promised to name the Tamale Stadium in the name of Alhaji Aliyu Mahama. Fortunately, we never got declared winners, so we missed the opportunity of honoring his memory with that. We think that this is a good step, even in the opposition, to hold this, which of course in our history we haven't never done ever or before in the northern region. So it comes with its own uniqueness, and I think that is just way beyond just having mere euphoria.
Mm. But there are reports that Tamale was chosen to demystify the perception that MPP is an Akan party and has concentrated its conferences in the south. Is that the case?
Well, you may want to say so, because I did mention that we have done our best performance ever in the northern region. Look at the number of seats that we hold now. So that in itself, for me, it points to the fact that we are not just a marginalized party. We are not just an Akan party, so as our opponents would want the world to believe. But this will reinforce the fact that indeed we are a national party. And indeed, don't also forget that the NPP traces its roots somehow to the north. The formation of the Northern People's Party. You had very giant pillars in the north who started the party and its formation. All of these are important. And so for me, the significance is quite more than just the euphoria.
And then others also believe that looking at the gains from the north, looking at the trend, this could be a ploy to get more votes from the north where the party has suffered in recent years.
I believe so. Our performance in 2009, away from 2008, is an indication that we have a lot of gains to make in the north. We currently hold this number of seats from 3 to 10, 10, 11 thereof. Then what it means is that the potential is great. We have a lot of story to tell. And obviously, you cannot rule out this. Definitely, our brothers in the north, our brothers and sisters in the north, will feel a bit excited and would embrace it. Already, I'm told, there's so much happiness and excitement around the expectation that we are going to have this event in the north. And I think it will turn around things. No two ways about that.
Mm-hmm. So how much will be needed to conduct a centralized election? Because earlier we heard it will cost 1.2 million Ghana cedis.
Not necessarily. That budget of 1.2 million was just a guide away from what we did in 2009. What we had done was to cost holding it simultaneously in a decentralized manner. Currently, what we have on the table is that we are now going to work out what the real details are. But the 1.2 million you heard was just around what we spent in organizing the same event sometime in 2012 in Accra.
Which means you need more money now.
It could also be less, depending on what you're looking at.
Right. So do you have the money now? Others are also of the opinion that the MPP has gotten some money recently. That's why you decided to go centralized. Is that the case?
Not really. You may recall that we have done four stages of elections. We've done polling station elections, we've done constituency, we've done electoral areas, we've done region. In all of this, at no point did the MPP have to go and borrow money externally. We have had to raise money internally to do all of these elections. I want people to see the debate that ensued in the course of this and last week over the holding of this election, whether in a centralized or decentralized form, as one that sought to put in perspective how do we hold or how do we use our money, even if we had it. Was it important that we do it in the way that we wanted to do and at that cost, vis-a-vis what we're going to do now? But at the end of the day, I think the National Council position, and by a majority view, is that it comes with so much significance and importance to want to do it in a single venue. And I think that even overrides the issue of cost. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we don't really have to put out too much about cost. But I can assure you the party has enough funds to run this activity.
Okay, can you tell us how much you have at the moment in your kitty?
How much we have in our kitty?
Yes.
Wow, I wish a political party could do that. We only do that to the Electoral Commission. Mm. As I sit here, really, I also do not know how much indeed lies the party's kit, because I don't keep the party's finances. I'm in charge of elections, and there is a treasury department. But I mean, I can find out for you some other time if I have to.
Right, because I thought the parties and the media are partners in development, so divulging such information could help our cause. But why would some people get the impression that the party's financial position is not too good, hence the idea of decentralized delegates conference?
I must concede that money became one of the factors that was spoken about in determining whether or not the prudent way to organize this election was decentrally doing it or centrally. But that for me is not the case, that we indeed are that broke. No. And I've just cited examples of various stages of elections that we have had to do with the party's own funds. But I know once the money came in, there was a temptation for people to misrepresent or misunderstand. But it was not entirely about the money. As I tell you, we're going to have to run this election centrally. It's going to go quite high in terms of the budget. And you can trust me, the money will be raised internally. And so I cannot fully accept the position that the party does not have money to run this election.
So what other issues came up at the meeting, or was the meeting convened because people were calling for a centralized venue?
Oh, basically, yes. This was the main issue that was looked at. Beyond this point, were also some discussions about the need to look at our constitution again. The NPP constitution has gone through some revision about twice or so, and members thought that it will sit well with us and serve us well if in the future we take a look at some portions of our constitution, particularly with the holding of an annual, extraordinary annual delegates conference, such as what is on our hands. You have to hold national elections at the same time during the conference. Is it important to, is it okay to decouple the two so that you could have an extensive and elaborate session of reading reports from the chairman, treasurer, and so on and so forth, and then doing the election separately? Some people think that it's quite packed, and that these are very two important events, so they need to separate them. I think unanimously the meeting agreed, but that was not the moment for that discussion. So that has been deferred, and I do know that in the future, when we come to talk about reforms or revision of our constitution, this will also.
Right, Mr. Kosa, just hold on. We have a member of the National Council, Frederick Oparianza, on the line. He kicked against the decentralized Congress. So hold on, we go over to him and then get back to you. Mr. Oparianza, you're welcome.
Thank you.
So how does how do you feel about the decision to go? Or let me put it this way, you must be a happy man today after the decision to go centralized now.
Well, thank you very much. I didn't even know you have my brother called out. We speak the same language. Yeah, both from the MPP fraternity, so I think we have surprised him even addressing the issue. But indeed, we are all very happy because at the end of the day, he's taking for the benefit of our great party.
Mr. Barrister, could you kindly speak up? We can hardly hear you.
Okay. Is it a little better?
Yeah, it's better now.
Okay. I was saying that I didn't even know that you had my brother Kosa on the line because we are all from the same MPP fraternity. I'm not sure I will be expressing any different sentiments or views from what he is expressing.
Yeah, but it depends on the way I push the two of you.
Well, the issue, I believe, is not that there were two parties against different views, if you will. The National Executive Committee had taken a certain decision within its own right. It was properly constituted. They have sat down and taken a decision, believing that it was doing what is right for the party. There was nothing wrong with the processes or the right of the party to take that decision. Indeed, I don't think that the NEC had any ulterior motives other than the best interest of the party when it began. The only difference is that I felt that it had gone slightly against our constitution, and then I raised the caution. Nobody sought to put any impediments in my way when I raised the caution. The national chairman responded. The caucus in parliament looked at the issues I had raised. The council of elders looked at it. And then a meeting of national council was called, at which council felt that the point I had raised was valid and they would prepare that to be by that position. So I don't think there is somebody winning here and somebody losing here.
Right.
If you were at the meeting, you would find that it was a very cordial meeting. People advanced arguments why we should go this way or that way. And eventually, I even heard a caucus saying that majority did out. Go as far as saying that there was consensus. Everybody agreed that in view of facts and everything presented, it's better that we go for the centralized and rather the issues to be addressed, like you were saying, with how we are going to raise the necessary funds. We are very resourceful party. I was speaking earlier on with one station and they were saying that looking at the economic conditions of this country, it's going to be difficult for us to raise these funds. And I bet you differ.
Right, I'll come back to the issue of, how to raise funds. So you must be a happy man who perhaps should be carried shoulder high. But we were told you'd wanted to go to court. Is that the case?
No, that never crossed my mind. I do not see why I would be taking my party to court at all. I believe in the rule of law in our party prevailing at all times, and indeed due process was followed and we have resolved whatever little differences that there could have been. And like I said, I'm happy with the process and I'm very happy to be a member of the MPP. And I think that everybody who was at meeting today was very, very happy as well. I do not sincerely believe that anybody felt that they had lost anything.
Right. So the centralized view has eventually won the day. Now let's look at the issue of fundraising.
If you will allow me, we all agree on one point. Like Kosa was saying, that it is quite cumbersome combining this election with the ordinary operations of conference in terms of deliberating on the chairman's report and all that. But you see, when you operate in a constitution, I don't know if you've ever seen the American Constitution. It is a very small document. I'm sure at the time they drafted it, they could never have foreseen all the possibilities that will permutate itself over the year. And And so, over the years, what has happened is what they call the amendment. They will tell you the Fifth Amendment is your right not to incriminate yourself by giving evidence against yourself. There are so many amendments there, by example. So clearly, be it our party constitution or our national constitution, as we operate them and we find difficulty with them, with time, we'll make the necessary amendments. And so the decision really was about, nobody disagreed that by right, conference should be centralized. The question was whether it was proper to, at this time, put aside the constitutional provision and find it more expedient to go with the decentralized. But the thinking is that let us go by what the constitution is saying for now and find a way rather to amend our constitution the nearest possible future so that we can have a decentralized election. So you would understand that it is not as if we don't even agree that the decentralized could be a better way of doing the election. Yes, conference can meet and continue to meet as conference. But when it comes to electing the national offices, like just like we do for the presidential candidates, we feel that it's better, probably not even to do it at the regional office. Probably we go as low as limited constituency.
Right. So let's look at the issue of cost. As you just raised that we are in dire straits at the moment economically. We were told some years back the party spent more around 1.2 million Ghana cedis to organize the delegates congress. When you were pushing for the centralized option, did you take into cognizance the issue of cost, or you were pushing for that, you know, knowing that that there is a way the party could raise funds for the conference?
Precisely. I heard my brother once again saying that we are resourceful and we are not really short of funds. The question was looking at what is more appropriate to apply our funds to at the moment. And so once conference has stated that we should be going for a centralized conference. But once council has decided we should go for a centralized conference, it is clear that our resources are better channeled to champion the decision of council. But really speaking, the fact that the nation is suffering at this time, individuals are suffering, is ample evidence why the public and businessmen should be supporting the cause of the MPP to come back to power and remove the NDP from office. So it is clear that they are failing us, and the MPP is the best option that is in waiting to come and fix all the problems that they are having. And that is why people will be even more ready now to put their little resources they have to supporting the MPP, so they can set up structures properly and be able to achieve the NDP.
I hope you are not soliciting them for funds on our platform.
Not really. I wouldn't want to do that to you being a government.
Well, so Mr. Parents, let's move on. Whether you want to solicit for funds or not, you've already made a point. So businessmen perhaps are listening. So we wish you well. But how should a party go about raising funds for the Congress? And would you say by April the party would have raised the money needed?
I am very, very positive that before that date, all the necessary funding that is required will be in place. I don't think the date was changed because of inadequate funds. Don't forget that centralizing the function requires different set of organizational activities and planning from what was happening previous. And since we are just about 3 weeks to the end of the month and going into the original date, it was only fair that the elections committee be given adequate time to organize itself and plan the activities for the new modalities that are going to be having.
Right, so
I think that it is the least of our worries.
Right, I'm sure you would also be willing to donate generously to the cause of the party.
The members of parliament have given a clear indication of our willingness to support this particular that we did indicate clearly to council that we were willing to do in support of this.
So have you come to a consensus how much you are donating, the members of parliament?
Sorry, come again.
Have you come to a consensus on how much you are donating, I mean the members of parliament?
We are being led in that regard by the leadership of parliament, and I'm sure the decisions that they will be taking and passing on to the elections committee is the decision that the whole parliamentary group will be supporting.
Right. We would want to thank you very much for talking to us. Frederick Oparianza is a member of the National Council of the NPP. Mr. Kosa, I'm sure you are still with us. Hello, Mr. Kosa. We seem to have lost Mr. Kosa. So we go for a quick break. And now Dr. Kobi Mensah is a lecturer at the University of Ghana Business School and expert in political marketing. Doc, you're welcome.
Thank you.
The MPP,
good evening to your listener.
Right, good evening, sir. The MPP has decided to maintain the centralized conference to elect national executives after the initial decision of a decentralized election. What is your take on this one?
Right. I think it's a good thing. As I said last week, I thought that the centralized election is the best to go. I mean, centralized, you know, kind of a delegate and national executive election is the best to go. Because if you decentralize it, I understand the rationale behind cost cutting at the same time trying to empower the base. But the essential thing or the most important thing about, you know, getting everybody together and making sure that they get a message, and then again they feel the momentum going, wouldn't be realized in a decentralized process. So I think it's a very good thing that they've actually changed your mind.
Right. But Tamale, as the venue for the election, how significant is this move? Because people think that it was geared towards demystifying the belief that MPP is an Akan party.
Well, that's the perception. But I think that on the ground, there had been certain manifestation that suggested the party is not as strong up north. So selecting Tamale, I think, is a strategic decision, and I think is the best decision for the party, because I believe that the message has to be sent to everybody around, including those of the north. And if the party is able to do a very good job up north, especially with Tamale, I'm sure they will be able to make a lot of gains up north. So I think it's a very good decision that they've chosen up north as a strategic point, not only because they are actually, sort of the capital of the, so to speak, of the northern, region. But again, it's a very boisterous, up and coming, I don't know how to put it, but economically, very good, area to choose. I think strategically, it's a good thing for MPP to choose Tamale.
Right. The doc, looking at the trend, election trend, MPP, seems to be making some inroads in the north, you know. But right now we have a certain president who comes from the north. Don't you think these inroads could be halted?
Well, yes, you can say that the president is from the north, and as a result, the NDC has an upper hand. But it all depends on delivery, isn't it? If the present administration is not able to deliver very well for the people of Tamale and for the people of the north, clearly there's no point for them to give them their mandate. And I'm sure, people wouldn't say that because the president is from the north, in any case, they've got to vote. The party has to do, better. I mean, the government in power has to do better so that people can give them the mandate. So if MPP is able to give a very strong message and able to promise and assure people in the north that they can do a better job than the current administration, then why not? I'm sure they will give them the mandate.
Right, and let's look at the controversies surrounding the financial state of the party. Would you say the party will be able to raise enough funds to organize this particular Congress?
I have no doubt. I have no doubt, because obviously they would arrive at the decision to go ahead with it centralized, you know, based on their resources or based on expectations of raising money. And if they have taken that decision, I have no doubt that they can raise the money. I mean, let's not forget, MPP is the largest opposition, actually, in the country. These are the two big parties, NDC and MPP. So there's no doubt that they can raise the money or the resources needed for such an event. So once they have come to the realization that centralized elections or centralized races is the way to go, I think that they will be able to raise the money needed for that process. So I have no doubt that they can raise it. Yes.
Right, Doc. You might have followed the campaign. Some of the candidates for national executive positions have been conducting themselves. Are they doing the right thing? The delivery, the message. Are you sure they're on track?
Yes. I mean, so far, none of them had been, if I should put it, had been very pronounced in terms of coming out. And I'm sure it was because of the issues surrounding whether they're going to have a decentralized process or centralized process. And again, the internal wranglings going on. And I think that's the reason why none of them had been, so to speak, front runner or had actually been coming out strongly with their message. So yes, that hadn't been seen yet. But I think that once the decision has been reached as to how they're going to conduct, the Congress, and everybody is certain in their mind, I'm sure in the next few days to come or next few weeks to come, we're going to see a very strong, performance, a very strong campaign, coming out from these people who are actually contesting for various, various positions in the party.
Right, Dr. Kobi, we want to thank you very much for talking to us. Dr. Kobi Mensah is a lecturer at the University of Ghana Business School and expert in political marketing. Let's read some of your text messages. The peaceful nature of the just ended regional elections endorsed the MPP as a noble party. May the good Lord bring peace and victory to the party in 2016. And then Napoleon from Tumu Sankofa Base, we are appealing to President John Mahama to appoint a DC for Sisala East District. We are lagging behind in terms of development. And then JB in the ND, everybody now wants to be in political executive position. Yakubu Gubli from Asankaragua, please, it's time the MPP, let the Akan group, especially Ashantis, know that the party is not only for them. We go for another quick break. So we move on to our next story. Different strokes for different users of the University of Ghana campus roads behind the news has learnt that students will now be exempted from paying tolls. Other categories of road users would see the amount reduced. The public relations officer of the Students' Representative Council of the University of Ghana, Megdad Mohammed, tells us the details of this new development. You're welcome. Mohammed, are you with us?
You, please.
Right. So what is new about the university's decision to collect tolls from users of its roads?
Good evening to your listeners. Like you rightly said, the university has reconsidered the decision to include students in the toll charges, and the fact that commercial drivers within the university environment were being considered with some concessions in terms of cost, because the SRC had expressed earlier the fear that the drivers may be forced to put on the costs onto students. But with the new development, management have given some ears to the concerns we have raised on the toll booth, and so far the indications are that it's been scrapped off on the part of students. And for the commercial drivers, we are hoping that very soon there will be some operationalization of the scheme where the 400 Ghana cedis they were supposed to pay for a sticker a year will now be 100 cedis as soon as possible.
Right. So what were some of the proposals you presented? Because it seems to have worked, and you must be a happy man. What were some of the proposals?
First and foremost, we indicated to management, we took four proposals to management. The first being that we represented students, and as students, we were not happy that management went public with the toll charges without consulting us on what amount we thought we could afford. And for that reason, we initially even went to management with the fact that we couldn't pay the 400 Ghana cedis. But out of the 400 Ghana cedis, the SRC and the students we represent thought we could only afford 20 Ghana cedis. But management thought that, okay, from 400 Ghana cedis to 20 Ghana cedis, it would be better they exempt us entirely from the system, which is very commendable. And secondly, we indicated to management that the commercial drivers on campus have already capitalized on the toll charges, and they are extorting huge monies from students in terms of fares so far, and that the SRC proposes for the consideration of management that they made some wide concessions for those commercial drivers in order that they will have no excuse to charge beyond certain amounts when students are reporting or when they are going about their normal activities. And on the third issue, we spoke about improving intra-campus transportation for students. The shuttle system had been it had been in operation, but the effectiveness had not been to a level which is convenient for students. And we thought that with the introduction of the tool, there should be an effective transportation system, a shuttling service, which will come to the aid of the students and give them much convenience in their day-to-day activities within the university environment. And finally, we realized that as a council, as students, and the education we receive entitles us not to be selfish individuals, just to think and reason for our interest alone. But our education reflects that anytime we have a discussion on a policy, we should as well as students consider its implication on the broader masses of the Ghanaian people, and for which reason we put in a word or two on behalf of the general populace who will be using the roads. We told management that they consider again the reduction of the charge for the general public, but unfortunately this final demand was not met. But three out of the four demands, management considered them fully. And like I indicated, we even went with we knocked off 380 cedis from the 400 cedis, but management chose to entirely exempt us as a show of goodwill to the student movement.
Right, so just as I said, you must be happy. But do you suspect other factors may have pushed the authorities to reconsider their decision?
I believe that the university is human. The university management and those in charge are human. I know humans are bound to err. We believe that as students, we are indispensable stakeholders. We know that management that does not, in all due respect, operate in a vacuum. They operate in a system where students are with them. There are times we have supported them in the implementation of policy. We are stakeholders who cannot be taken out of the chain and expect a fruitful result, because by and large, we are the products of the system if any results will come out of it. And so the expectation was that from the very beginning, if the SRC had been consulted in the computation of the toll charges, we wouldn't have even have to come to this level where the SRC would even threaten TRIA demonstration on February 11th. Before some concessions will have been made. As I speak to you, we even have our students in the court seeking interpretation on the matter. We have come so very far, but I thought that we wouldn't have even come to this level if what needed to be done had been done earlier on. But all in all, it's been a positive development, and the SRC is duly humbled by the concession.
Right. Let's look at the issue of the court action. Are you going to withdraw the case?
The SRC did not file any case in the Supreme Court. It is two independent-minded students who felt that the brouhaha in the media and the muddying of the waters by legal brains in the media has left so many students with so much questions to ask and so little answers. And so they took upon themselves the courageous move of seeking an interpretation in the highest court of the land. That the court declares the legality or otherwise of the whole issue. But from the very beginning, as a council, the SRC has indicated that our problem has not been with the principle of the tolling, because we know what went into the loan agreement and the university's loan repayment obligation to the financial institution who financed the road resealing and re-asphalting. That remains standing, and the SRC will not play the hypocrite in this respect. We knew what went into it, and as to the legality or otherwise of it, we should leave it perhaps for the Supreme Court. Mm. But until then, I've said it elsewhere that respectfully, we are not a taxi driver's representative council. We are not a fisherman representative council. We represent students, and two of our students have taken the matter to the court. We should, as a matter of obligation or duty, give them our solidarity no matter the outcome of the court.
So you are not going to encourage them to withdraw the case?
We'll do whatever is possible within our means to ensure that nothing untoward happens. But they only deserve our solidarity.
What do you mean by nothing untoward?
Basically, what we're saying is that the only thing they deserve from us at this moment is solidarity. You know, it's not an easy move that students will decide that out of their own initiative they were going forward to the court to seek redress. That matter is not in the domain of the SRC. We are only concerned about the matter simply because their umbilical cord is tied to us by virtue of their studentship. Apart from that, nothing else.
Mm. So would you have wished the university abandoned the tolling entirely?
I have indicated that the SRC is not against the principle of the tolling. We have forced and we have pursued internally. We have gone through all the available means of addressing our concerns, and we have gotten a result. We are hoping that whatever comes out of it, our position is highlighted that the SRC has not been against the principle of the toll booth.
Right.
Our concern has always been with the cost and why we were not consulted from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. Right, we want to thank you very much. Meghdad Mohammed is the public relations officer of the Students Representative Council of the University of Ghana. We also speak to Theophilus Tetecha, MP for Ablekuma Central and Vice Chairman for Parliamentary Select Committee on Roads and Transport. You are welcome, sir.
Thank you very much, and good evening to you all listening.
Right, so that's your committee. Welcome the action by the University of Ghana exempting students from paying tolls on the use of its roads.
Well, it's rather unfortunate that we have to allow things to degenerate to this level before remedial actions are being taken. For us, as a committee, what we intend doing, we have to carry that those intentions through. You know, today, the Speaker directed the two committees to, he gave us 2 weeks to meet on the issue and then ensure that we report back to the House as to the final decisions reached. So for us as a committee, we will go ahead with the mandate that we've been given from the chair to invite especially the various stakeholders to actually ascertain actually how things went about. So for the university making concessions to the students, for me, it is in the right order, in the sense that I've argued that, look, when you look at the statutes, lecturers on campus and students on campus, they are all within the university community, isn't it? So I ask myself, why should lecturers be exempted from paying while students are being asked to pay? And that is discrimination. That is my personal opinion. So I wasn't surprised to hear this evening that that concession has been made to the students, which for me, I think, is in the right order.
Mm.
Nonetheless, the issue at stake is whether they have the right or otherwise to do exactly what they are doing at the university. And as the committee, we have taken the position that we want the various stakeholders to brief us as to what happened and those decisions were taken. How, what went into the taking of those decisions? Is it in consonance with our rules and regulations? And if at the end of the day, it is found to be in conformity, then we will report fail. But if it is in variance with what it's supposed to be, we also report fail. So that is the position we have taken as a committee. It's becoming very difficult for us as a committee to actually make our position known, especially to the public.
Why?
Because of this court case. You know, once the issue has been sent to court, it will be very difficult to make an opinion on the issue, because we also know some of the rules and regulations. But as committee members, we cannot, or as members of parliament, we don't want to interfere with the judiciary processes, and that will undermine our democracy. So for us, my only appeal is that maybe as a result of this concession, the various parties in court will understand each other and then bring the matter back home for settlement. That would be a very good idea. But if not so, then the court has to go through all its procedures to determine the truth or otherwise, or
right,
the fact or the otherwise of the case.
Mm. But are you not going to muddy the waters by revisiting the issue after this concession?
No, you know, there are a whole lot of issues. Tomorrow, we are meeting with the minister. At the end of the meeting, we will get to know the facts.
Mm.
And then based on that, as a committee, we will also give the public feedback on the issue. We are not going to muddy the waters in the sense that as a committee, we have a responsibility, and that is what we are carrying through. We have a responsibility to oversight the roads and transport ministry. And what is happening now concerns roads and highways. And as such, as a committee, we should be abreast with exactly what took place, so that in the near future, maybe such a thing will also not occur.
Right.
But if we say because the university has made concessions to the students and the students are satisfied, so we end it there, I don't think that is right.
Right, sir. We wish...
Maybe in the near future, another institution will also do such a thing.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, sir. We want to thank you very much for your contribution. Theophilus Tetecha is MP for Abliqma Central and Vice Chairman, Parliamentary Select Committee on Roads and Transport. And now to our next story. There should be more facilities for screening and treatment of cancers in the country. Members of Parliament want measures to be put in place to prevent cancers. The MP stated this on World Cancer Day. We pick the thoughts of Madam Rosemond Abra, MP for Wija Gbawe. You're welcome, Madam.
Hello, thank you.
I hope you are doing well.
Oh, I'm fine.
Good.
Hope you're also doing well.
I'm doing pretty well. So what role could MPs play to reduce the incidence of cancers?
Well, we have roles to play. For example, I was calling on the floor for awareness creation. And through our interaction with our constituents, we can organize meetings with our constituents to create awareness for the prevalence, detection, and prevention of breast cancer. And we can also economically assist our constituents in case we have the fund for health and other common funds, if they keep flowing. We can organize some health screening exercises for detection of, say, breast cancer or... Well, the one we cannot afford to bring down to the people is the one for detecting cervical cancer. That one is involves a bit of complicating machines, the use of machines which need laboratory settings.
Mm. Madam, it seems the focus has been on breast cancer all the time, but there are other cancers. Why the focus on breast cancers? It seems the attention has been put on the women. Why is it so?
Well, I think the listen, the attention is focused on breast cancer because it is increasingly and vigorously becoming one of the number one killer diseases in Ghana. And you know, Ghana is ranked the 10th in the whole world in the cases of breast cancer, women staying with breast cancer, the prevalence. We are ranked 10th, and it is very, very serious.
Madam, I'm hearing this for the first time, and
yes,
it has sent shivers down my spine. You are an MP. So what
yes
have you been doing? Because 10th, the whole world, is frightening. What have you been doing to ensure that you put the right structures in place to prevent, to reduce the trend?
Well, like we have already discussed, this is what we are now doing. We are creating awareness, making statements on Parliament. Today, the Speaker directed that the statements we made should be forwarded to the Minister of Health for study. And maybe from this, committees will be set up. And we would step up creation of awareness like we did for the HIV menace. I think we need to do the same thing for the breast cancer to create awareness, let them know about it. And I was calling on the Minister of Health and Government to devolve measures that the simple woman down there in the village can know that I now have cervical cancer or I now have breast cancer. That education is very important. So we are going to, like I've said, we MPs, we are going to use our common fund that we have to step up screening programs, thanks to a lot of NGOs and churches and civil society organizations have now joined in the screening of breast cancer.
Right.
They even do it in church rooms and church halls.
Right.
For the women.
Right. That is, I believe it may have come a bit too late, but we hope that you redouble your efforts and put in place all the necessary measures to ensure that the situation is curtailed. We want to thank you very much for talking to us. Madam Rosemond Abra is MP for Wager Gbawe. And now Dr. Kofi Nyako is head of Non-Communicable Diseases Ghana Health Service. Doc, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Doc, how widespread is the cancer disease among Ghanaians?
Yeah, the burden is increasing, as we have been saying. And cancer is everywhere now. Previously, because of the level of awareness, people were not aware, but the cancers were with us. And most people were not reporting early, and they only come late. That people have the disease for a long time before they come, and you may think that they don't have the cancer. And people have died of cancers without even reporting in our facilities. But now the awareness is coming up. And in our facilities, we realize that the numbers are increasing. If I can give some few statistics, Ghana, we are expecting almost about 15,000 cases, new cases of cancer generally every year. Cervical cancer is the number one in women, which is almost about 3,000. Whilst breast is the second, which is almost about 2,000 new cases. And out of these 3,000 cervical cancer cases, about 2,000 die. Whilst the breast cancer, out of the 2,000, about 1,000 die. This year's World Cancer Day, as you are aware, was launched by the Honorable Minister, and the team was debunking the myths and that cancer can be prevented and is curable. And this is appropriate because, as we say, in Ghana, people come very late because of these myths and misconceptions that nothing can be done about cancer. But actually, once we detect it early, we can do something about it. It's actually curable. So we want people to be aware that these myths and misconceptions can be debunked and that they can have access to treatment which is available. Luckily, in Ghana, we have a comprehensive cancer center at Kolebu and Kofanoche. So once they are detected early, we can save their lives. And even in our sub-region, most of our neighboring countries come to us for treatment because they don't have that state-of-the-art facility. So we have to take advantage of our facilities, come late and be cured. But most of the cases come early and be cured, but most of the cases come late. That has been our issue. So
okay,
this year's team is very appropriate, and we hope it will increase our survival level.
Right, Doc. So if I want to come to Kolebu tomorrow, What do I tell them? I come in and say I want to check for cancer. What is the procedure like?
We have a breast clinic at Skolebu, breast clinic at Skolfanoche. So once you walk into the cancer center, there's a breast clinic. You can be examined, and they firstly will take you through what we call clinical breast examination. They'll counsel you, take you through clinical breast examination. When there's a suspected lesion, you either go through ultrasound or mammography, and the process goes on. So Kolebu is a walk-in clinic. You can walk in at any time, and you can have it done.
Right, Doc. I am not a woman. I am a man. So definitely I wouldn't come checking for breast cancer. So what are some of the other cancers that we have?
Yes, as I said, cervical is also very high in the women. And for men, we have prostate cancer. Liver cancer is also for both men and women. It's also very high in Ghana. And childhood cancer has been neglected, but it's also key in our children. We have what we call Wilms tumor, Burkitt's lymphoma, retinoblastoma. They are all with us when you come to the hospital. So it's the level of awareness which over the years, every year we celebrate the World Cancer Day in October. We celebrate the Pink October, that is the Breast Cancer Month. And it has improved our level of awareness among the general public.
Mm. Yeah. Doc, can you share with us the common foods that cause cancer and perhaps the symptoms?
Yes, the risk factors for cancer are generally that if you don't eat healthy diet, but healthy diet is food that is rich in fruits and vegetables. And you know, in Ghana, we don't take a lot of fruits. We need to take a lot of fruits. Exercises are very good, and also obesity. Obesity is a risk factor for cancer. So once you exercise, you eat well, you shouldn't be obese. Obesity is a risk factor. And tobacco is very key. Tobacco, that is smoking, and alcohol use when you take in a lot of alcohol. So these are the risk factors. And also there are other toxins, which are called carcinogens in the environment, and also radiation also causes cancer. So once you avoid these and eat well and a healthy diet, we exercise, it will prevent about 30% of the cases. They won't even happen in the first place. So it means that statistics I gave, if we do these things, about 30% will not even come in the first place. And once we are having regular medical examination, we recommend that every 2 years, every woman who is eligible should have breast and cervical cancer screening. Every man above the age of 45 should have prostate screening. So if this is done and we detect it early, we can also save a whole number of them. And the little that will come will have the treatment options available, including palliative care. Yes.
Right, Doc. The statistics are a bit frightening. So what are you doing about public education?
Yes, we've been embarking on public education all this while within the radio media, print media. We have posters and leaflets. Various facilities. When you go, there are posters on breast cervical cancer, and these breast clinics and the cancer centers have been set up. We have screening centers, but it's now been rolled out. What our plan is that at each district hospital, we will have at least what we call clinical breast examination, that they can examine any woman who gets there, and suspected cases will now be referred to either the regional or the teaching hospitals for further care where necessary. And we are also setting up cervical cancer screening centers nationwide. We have just started. Even next month, we'll be having a training at Kwapem South to train some nurses to do screening at the districts. And we are going to train people from West Gonja District, Doma, Upper Menya Krobo. So the ministry is trying to roll it out, but as you know, it's cost capital intensive, and we need resources, and we are doing our best. And it's our hope that in the next 2 or 3 years, we will have a wider coverage. And today at the World Cancer Day celebration, the World Health Organization indicated that they are going to support Ghana to at least within the next 2-3 years have about 25% of our women screened for cervical cancer.
Right.
The main issue is that we don't have our screening. When you go to the advanced countries, about 80 to 90% of all eligible women have been screened, and they screen them almost every 2 years. But in Ghana, the coverage is just about 5% because we don't have enough facilities to screen. So there is a WHO program which is going to help us in the next 2-3 years at least get about 25% coverage, which will be a very big effort, even amongst Africa. Africa's screening levels are very low because of resources, as you are aware. Non-communicable diseases, including cancer, has been under-resourced, and it's now things are picking up.
Right, Dr. We want to thank you very much for talking to us. Dr. Kutinyak is head of non-communicable diseases of the Ghana Health Service. So that's how we draw the curtains on today's edition of the program. Our producers have been Bryce Agama, Christopher Asiri, John Pobi, and Celestine Avi. And then our summarizer, Baba Otu, and our technician, Isaac Yao Adu. My name is Ibrahim Opong Kwating.